In our collaborative award series with Biz Community, we've been unpacking what it really takes to win regional and international marketing and creative industry awards. From the bookmarks to Cannes, we've looked at remarkable work and the thinking behind it. But awards don't happen in isolation. So the question we really wanted to explore next was this. What goes into client-agency relationships that consistently lead to award wins and real customer impact? In this episode, I co-host with the editor of Biz Community, Danette Breitenbach, as part of our ongoing collaboration focused on marketing, advertising, and creative industry awards. Our guests are Nomfundo Dlangisa, the head of marketing and communications at Stellenbosch Business School, and one of the highest-ranked brand representatives in the IAB South Africa Bookmarks Digital Rankings, and Parin Shah, Head of Data and Analytics at Roger Wilco. In 2025, Roger Wilco and Stellenbosch Business School won 12 local and international awards for GEF, a generative engine optimization tool that responds to the way search and human behavior are changing. So we ask, what does it take to build and manage a relationship that delivers this level of consistency, innovation, and trust?
We operate on a level where we're in a partnership versus just another supplier. So there's a lot of transparency in the work that we do. There's honest collaboration and there's trust. There's also always room for a little bit of experimentation.
We find out how agencies and their brand partners know if something is a passing fad or a trend that will shift the needle.
Digital marketing is changing, but it's changing because user behavior is equally changing. And how do we keep space for experimentation? It's mainly because we cannot keep doing the same things all the time. We do definitely optimization, but with the industry changing, with platforms changing, with user behavior changing, we have to move at that pace. And that's why we need to experiment. Because there is, especially with digital marketing and also with above the line, what happens is there is no silver bullet. You really don't know what sticks, right? We definitely need to experiment with different creatives, different messaging, different platforms, different timings. There are so many variables that come into play.
Once all the buzzwords have come and gone, how will marketing and advertising change?
2025 was a year full of buzzwords. And everything around AI. And what agency did was, major big agencies as well, they started building a lot of proprietary tools. Everybody wanted to embed AI. And the reason being is, it's not the agencies to blame. It's also the brands, because I think there are a lot of stats. Like, for example, there was around 60% of brands, they wanted to test AI. And that was a global stats. But nobody knew what they want to do. Everybody wants to just onboard AI just to look cool and just to be part of the moving industry. But nobody knew what that is. And that's why agencies had to answer those requests.
For insights on building client agency partnerships that lead to award wins and long-term brand growth, stay with us. And if you'd like to help us bring more thoughtful conversations like this one, please share this episode and follow The Lead Creative on LinkedIn. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Nomfundo, congratulations to you on being the second top-rated marketing representative on the inaugural Bookmarks, Bookmarks listing. That was a great end to the year for you, I'm sure.
Absolutely. It was truly an honor. I was not expecting it, and I'm still in awe.
To start off, Nomfundo, there are many things that are happening in the marketing scene, you know, from the rise of AI to GEO to this tool and that fad. How do you know that something is going to have real impact in the industry, or it's just a passing fad?
You're absolutely right. There are so many trends happening at the speed of light. And I think being in education makes you quite curious about all the things that are happening. And being a marketer has made me, you know, interested in human behaviors, observing my own behaviors and how I used to search a couple of years ago and how, you know, I'm operating now. And also listening to the students, listening to the executives, the stakeholders, and actually really getting to understand to what is happening. I think that really grounds what we do in true human insight for us to make a true connection in what we do. So in terms of the trends, it's not all relevant, but just observing, you know, how humans are behaving in order to make that meaningful impact and connection to them.
Pareen Nomfundo says, listening, remaining curious, checking human behavior, including your own. How do you know that something is going to have an impact in the industry, or it's just a passing fad?
Let me start off by saying I completely agree with Nomfundo. I'm going to echo on what she actually said. As the head of data, of course, we definitely keep a tab on all the predictions for the new year, and we also keep a tab on the changes in the platform. But I do want to say that Foresight doesn't just sit with these predictions. It also starts by noticing when familiar data and patterns doesn't make sense. And what do I mean by that is we saw this. We actually did a nice case study with iWise, and that is we started optimizing in platform, but then with changes, we see that the data doesn't make sense. It doesn't tell the same story. And that's where we start observing trends and patterns based on behaviors, based on what the data is telling us and where the trends are missing. And that's how we try and identify where's the next step and which one to leverage as well.
I'll stick with you, Pareen. So for people who aren't deep in the analytics world, who don't really know what's happening in this space, how would you describe GF, the platform that led to the many wins for Roger Wilco and Stellenbosch Business School? How does it differ from how people think of SEO, for example? I suppose behavior came in as part of it. Now in the conversation, when I was asking that first question, how does GEO or GEOF tap into human behavior today in different ways that SEO did?
So for the listeners, let me just start off by saying GEOF is basically just a proprietary monitoring tool. It's a RW designed monitoring tool. That's a short answer. But expanding on it, like Nomfundo also mentioned, where her own behavior changed, right? It is to no one's surprise that the way people have started searching and doing a research has changed. Back in the day, we used to go to just Google search engines or any search engine, and we used to type. But now things have changed. People have started using, I think 2025 AI was the buzzword, and generative search engines became like a big thing. We no longer talk of it as a platform. It's already like our day-to-day tool. So what we were speaking about trends also. So at Roger Wilco, what we actually started observing is that the search behavior started shifting. So what we did was, in the initial stages, things were a bit blur. They were ambiguous. So what we did was we started our own monitoring tool where we help understand and influence for brands like SBS, how do they appear in this generative search engines and how do they rank versus their competitors? So traditional SEO, you mentioned SEO. So traditional SEO was all about ranking on Google, whereas now GEO is about brands being mentioned, described, and recommended. So the AI has to recommend you. So that's where GEF came into being, where it would monitor these patterns. But of course, GEO, optimizing on GEO, it's a whole different science besides just this particular tool.
Nomvundo, in the early stages of generative search, institutions weren't prepared for what was coming. We knew that people were using AI. We knew that people were using generative engines to sort of start conversations, start search. So this technology was already in the back burner, already kind of changing human behavior. As a marketer who, to your point, is curious, keeps an eye on what's happening, keeps their head to the ground, how does that anticipation of a technology that's emerging, that's changing behavior, change how you brief or even collaborate with your agency as you do with Roger Wilco?
I think firstly, with Roger Wilco, we have a shared purpose, which is to bring meaningful brands to life. We operate on a level where we're in a partnership versus just another supplier. So there's a lot of transparency in the work that we do. There's honest collaboration and there's trust. There's also always room for a little bit of experimentation, because once we get the results that we want, which we did consistently, we were very happy with how we were performing. But it was like, now what? So what? What else can we do? And having that trust with them enabled us to get to a strategic conversation. How do we prepare for this next wave of generative engine optimization? And so from that, having those kind of conversation, we were able to get to a place where we could collaborate and get to a place where the brief wasn't just to execute, but to think of us as a strategic ally.
I get that. And I think sometimes with experimentation, sticking with this idea, I suppose, of experimentation, experiments are that, right? Like, I suppose it says so in the label, the experiment, you don't know what the outcome will be. How do you mitigate for that outcome, being that it's an experiment? I'll start with you on this one, Nomvundo.
I would say that, you know, there's 80% to do what we need to do, and then that 20% should always be there to experiment responsibly. And so for us, it allows us to do it quite responsibly, because we'll still meet our targets in what we need to do, but we're still also pushing the button to grow further and to take smarter risks and continue to being ambitious together.
Pareen, on this idea of experimentation, testing, learning, again, I think to Nomvundo's point that, you know, sometimes you need to experiment responsibly. How much of that, because, you know, the industry is evolving so much, so quickly, especially in the space that you play as head of analytics, how do you make space and time, given that briefs, client work, all the things that happen need to happen as they do, but at the same time, you need to innovate to keep up with the industry? How do you make space for that experimentation?
I love this particular question, and I'll answer your question, and then I want to also touch upon something else. How do we make space for experimentation? This might be a bit biased, if I may say, because I'm the head of data. Everything is data, right? If the data tells you something, like, we try and identify trends and patterns as much as possible. Rather than just like descriptive data or descriptive analysis, we also try and understand, what is the data telling you? What is it not telling you? And then where is it headed? Tied along with the behavior patterns, because digital marketing is changing, but it's changing because user behavior is equally changing. And how do we keep space for experimentation? It's mainly because we cannot keep doing the same things all the time. We do definitely optimization, but with the industry changing, with platforms changing, with user behavior changing, we have to move at that pace. And that's why we need to experiment, because there is, especially with digital marketing and also with above the line, what happens is there is no silver bullet. You really don't know what sticks, right? We definitely need to experiment with different creatives, different messaging, different platforms, different timings. There are so many variables that come into play. And then with things also changing, even if it's search engine, now people have started using ChatGPT. Then there is also AI overviews. But what type of searches do people search within each platform is also different. And for which brands it means, that's also different. So we definitely tie it back to doing our experiments responsibly and grounding everything based on the data and the patterns. It needs to be measurable. It needs to tell you a story. But all of this, and the second point that I wanted to highlight is that, trust me, all of this is only possible when the clients have that willingness to test different things. Like Nomfundo said, that they treat us as partners. And that's what's very important. When the client is willing, when the client is so open to always testing and learning and growing, that's where agencies like us can actually experiment and do great things.
I'll come back to you, Nomfundo. So you've managed to turn this collaboration, this partnership, into multiple award wins across different shows, from local shows to international shows, such as the Echo Awards. What do you see as the secret sauce in structuring client-agency relationships that enable this kind of proactive growth and focused work?
I would say is constant collaboration. And that is always keeping the client in the loop. When we see trends and patterns, it's like, firstly, before even collaboration, is also the trust and the trust that the clients actually put into a agency. They treat us as partners and not just like another vendor. When we break that particular barrier is when, how do we build this relationship? Then it's no longer just a box-ticking exercise of just doing your campaigns or just doing your particular project and then reporting and we're good to go. But when you treat each other as a partner, when we share the same motto, because that's exactly what Nomfundo started her conversation with Roger Welko and SPS, we actually have a shared objective. When we have a shared objective, we work in the same direction.
Nomfundo, just to bring you in here, from a client perspective, what needs to happen in the background? Because I think we underestimate what happens in the background to ensure that these partnerships deliver on what they do. Because you, as a client, have so many moving things, so many moving parts to ensure that campaigns, as opposed to the measurement parts that we discussed earlier, campaigns meet the measurements and demands that you have, from registrations to international footprint. What's the secret sauce from your end on the client side that makes sure that these partnerships really work?
I would say, Mongezi, the secret sauce, as you say, is that transparency is important. I need to be transparent about the brand and the business objectives and the priorities. And then Roger Wilco, as a partner, needs to bring the, I need to give them time to think, you know, give them space to think. And they have to give me the same space and grace. And yeah. And then they need to be able to push back. Mm. You know, I push back and it's all transparent. It's all from a place of us trying to get to a place. Yeah. Better way than where we are.
Mm.
And I believe that enables us to really co-create something that could be called a secret sauce, because it's built on that. Then we have the same values of having integrity, impact, and long-term growth for both of us.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. Parin, I'll come to you with that particular question, because I think that one of the things is that agencies tend to say, we don't have enough space to think, or at least that's one of the things that sometimes industry insiders and outsiders tend to say, that there are so many things that are piling onto each other that, to Nomfundo's point, we don't have enough space to think. And it's this space to think that leads to sort of these innovations, this growth, these things that we are talking about, the award wins. How do you work alongside clients or ensure that that space to think is there? Because it's in those spaces to think that you find the white spaces, you find the unique opportunities.
To be honest, in my personal experience, that space to think, it's quite a factor dependent on the client and the openness. If the client is very open and we share the same vision and mission, and the client is very, very open to testing and constantly learning, then the space to think automatically expands. Because then you move beyond the day-to-day and you start suggesting new ideas, because then that becomes a challenge. Like Nomfundo also rightly mentioned, that she pushes back. And that's exactly the point. When clients are that willing also to test different things, to be the pioneers in the market, to test new things and be the first to launch something, then the space to think automatically expands. As opposed to, I do understand that at times when time is crunch, when dependent on the industry, if you have to stick by the rules, because for many a times, brands themselves are tied because they have to conform to the global norms, to the brand guidelines, and then that space to think is limited. But as an agency and being into this particular industry, which is digital marketing, I think test and learn is a key thing for every agency and every client. If they adopt a test and learn attitude, then definitely it's a far away. Those are the brands and agencies that win.
I want to come back to you, Nomfundo. So the space that you occupy, where business schools play, is highly, highly competitive, because it's you are competing for a very sought after audience, a very sought after group of people that you're targeting with your message, and it becomes highly competitive. How do you, as Stellenbosch Business School, feel like you stand out in this digital space? And what does that mean for your overall marketing when you do, as you did with the recent awards that you've been winning?
Yes, Mungezi. The environment that we compete in is extremely competitive due to COVID. We're competing with global partners now. It's not just about rankings anymore, but it's really about relevance. So it's really important for us to cut through the digital noise via understanding the real human intent. So what are people actually searching for? What are they questioning? What are they aspiring to? It just doesn't start and end with that we are globally accredited anymore. So instead of us just broadcasting to our audiences, we really try and meet them where they are. And that's really important for us. So it's also about us really being authentic in how we tell the story of Stellenbosch Business School. And so our credibility, our empathy, and the innovation that we are able to get to with our partners actually helps us to get to the next level in terms of building our enrollment, our reputation, and our long-term brand equity.
I think so for our listeners out there, you may keep hearing me asking for internet to come in. The internet gods and the power gods are not with us today, or at least aren't playing nice with us today. So we keep losing Danette. And as and when she comes in, she'll keep asking her questions. And for the moment, it seems as though we've lost Danette again. So as Danette comes in, we'll continue the conversation and she'll jump in with her questions, as we have been as part of this series. Parin, I'll come to you. You mentioned data a bit earlier on as one of those things that give you insight into what's happening with human behavior, into what's happening in the industry, into how to, change or transform strategy. How does the industry translate this data into insights, into a narrative that helps the client feel confident about trying something new, about trying a new innovation? How do you translate that for a client?
They say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I say that data is also in the eye of the person reporting. And what do I mean by that is it's also how you interpret that data, right? There are so many signals. There are so many data points out there. But which one to capture and which one resonates is very important. And now with AI, like the quality of your data is also very important. So broadly, if I have to just categorize, when we have any set of data, I would categorize it in two broad categories or signals. One would definitely be the performance metric. So whatever you are doing or any project or anything that we do, it has to have like a KPI. We need to work towards an objective. This is also a bit contradicting because then when we started with Jeff or we started with GEO, we didn't really know what are the key metrics we needed to keep an eye on or what are the metrics, comparable metrics. But I think the bottom line that I'm trying to make is that whether it be new or an old service that we are testing, we need to have something in mind towards what we're trying to achieve, right? And that's where I call it as a performance metric. But the second type of signal that we try and keep a tab on from regards of data is the learning signals. Because the performance metric is definitely going to give you like your descriptive analysis in terms of what has happened and what we've done so far. But from a learning signal point of view is where we try and identify the patterns in the data and what is it trying to tell us. For example, if there are topics like a GEO will definitely tell you where your brand is ranked or from an SEO perspective, also which particular brand has a share of search. But then from a learning signal, it will also, the data will try and tell you what topics, like the behaviors that we were talking about initially in our conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
That's those learning signals that you need to identify in the data. Because we would see which queries are constantly surfacing across the engines. What small adjustments can we do in our content to create a proper structure? And then these insights actually feed directly into that optimization, the test and learning that we want. So that would be, how we would present it to the client.
Namfundo, I'll come to you because this is a very interesting point that Perrine makes about learning from the data, learning from the signals that you're getting from, you know, from search behavior to topics to content and all of that. There's the other side, which is the side that you're on, which is on the ground. What happens when inquiries at Stellenbosch Business School, for instance, start changing? The human behavior sort of start changing. You start realizing that we are, for instance, getting a lot of questions around this course rather than that. And yet we weren't advertising that course as much, or we weren't paying attention to that course as much. How does that change how you communicate with the agency to say, let's change course here, or let's redirect conversation or topic here? How do you do that?
Mongezi, how we do that is by, I think I already said it, it's like meeting people where they are. We really come from an academic background. So sometimes the kind of way we tend to communicate is a bit high level. And those sort of insights enable us to reach more people because we understand what they are actually looking for. So, you know, we're able to optimize our marketing efforts to be more meaningful versus, you know, the belief that if we speak to them in the executive way where we're reaching a certain kind of clientele, we're definitely going to reach them. But perhaps people aren't looking for that. And that data really does assist us to optimize our campaigns to be better campaigns to really engage with people.
I want to stick with you, Namfundo, for the next question. So one of the things that the marketing, communication, advertising industries tend to come under fire for is the number of awards that we have, that we kind of are very much celebratory of ourselves quite a lot, that there are too many awards, a lot of celebration, a lot more awards than, or at least some have said, at least. There's no, I haven't fact checked this, that there are more awards in marketing and advertising than anywhere else. So the question then to you is, from your perspective as a client, what is the real value of winning awards? I mentioned when we started that you've become the second highest rated brand representative according to the latest or the most recent findings. Stellenbosch Business School has been mentioned in very many awards. I think the Asse guys being the biggest one, the Bookmarks having been one as well, and the Echoes were another one. So there are all of these sort of proof points where there's mention and wins in relation to Stellenbosch Business School. But from a client perspective, is it about external recognition? Is it about morale? Or is it about something else entirely when there are these award wins? How do you view awards, especially creative industry awards?
I think marketers do need to celebrate themselves more often. We're responsible for quite a bit, so I'm all for the awards. So I think it's all of that, Mongezi. But more importantly, I think it's validation with a purpose, you know. Essentially, awards are that, you know, the Stellenbosch Business School does know what they're doing. They are engaging the market and where they are. It also signals that the kind of education you're going to be getting at Stellenbosch matters because it's relevant. It's not beyond from another space, you know. And then I think internally for us as a team, it means that the work that we do actually matters and that the direction that we're going is the right direction, you know. And then for me personally, awards are not about ego. It's basically about momentum. They really give me the confidence to keep building and boldly and responsibly because I do believe in responsible brands.
Danette, over to you.
Okay, I'll give us a bash then. I actually want to start with Perrine, something that you said earlier. And I was reading an article the other day about how very often as humans, we overestimate the short-term impact of something and we underestimate the long-term impact. So if we look at something like AI, we're very much focused sort of on the short-term. I'm going to lose my job, all those kind of things. But we're not necessarily looking at the long-term. So based on the work you've done, which has been very interesting with Jeff, et cetera, how do you see the technology playing forward? And how important is it to be allowed to fail as you go forward and experiment?
I think there's so many factors to that one question that you asked. What I'm going to answer in terms of short-term and in terms of long-term, that is, with AI, what is happening is definitely there has been a panic, or initially, at least in early 2025, there was a bit of panic in terms of people losing their jobs. But I think throughout the year, it gave people enough time to warm up to that idea that AI is here to stick, right? This is going to be a long-term game. So people had to quickly adopt and adapt to new skills. AI is not going to take anybody's job. It will only take your job if you do not quickly pivot to using AI. That's going to be the long-term impact. And in AI, actually, what I feel is it's very good if you use it responsibly. If you use it for efficiencies, if you use it to make your work better, AI is definitely very good. I think in terms of your other question was, how do we understand the short-term versus the long-term? Is that what your entire main question was? And something related to Jeff?
Well, it was part of it. And the other part was, how do you innovate without fear of failure? How important is it to be allowed to fail? Because these are new technologies. It's not always going to work.
100%. So I think that is such an important question. And that definitely ties to that question that Mongezi also asked in terms of how do you prepare yourself for failure when you're testing something? And I think as marketers, especially with how compared to traditional marketing, digital marketing has evolved over time, test and learn is something that every marketer needs to embed into their work. And when you start testing, I think we definitely need to have guardrails in place. We are not going to always win whenever we test. Right now, Jeff definitely as a tool helped us. But I would want to say the term that is coined is called test and learn. Learn is because when you fail, you are learning from that experience in order to move on to the next particular experiment. And that's what Namfando also said. When we actually experimented or when we started with Jeff, what happened was it was a road that we embarked upon, which nobody ever walked before. So we never really knew where we headed. We definitely tested this new particular tool. We definitely tested how people are searching, but we did that responsibly. And that was done also through constant collaboration. The fear of failure doesn't mean we shouldn't be testing. We definitely need to test. But I think a constant tab on what you're testing when it's something new will help us fail. Like the magnitude of the failure wouldn't be as deep.
Okay. Just staying with you for the moment. We have seen agencies developing programs and products, et cetera, throughout the years. Is this going to become more prevalent as the agency model shifts from sort of commercials, advertising, to be able to meet this new world that's being disrupted? And the agency model is very much being disrupted. So how do you see this going forward? Do you think it will be more product-based, service-based? Just an opinion on that.
I love that particular question. And I don't know, I might be in trouble if I have to answer it honestly. But what the heck, I will answer it to my opinion. And what I feel is, especially last year, right? 2025 was a year full of buzzwords and everything around AI. And what agency did was, major big agencies as well, they started building a lot of proprietary tools. Everybody wanted to embed AI. And the reason being is, it's not the agencies to blame. It's also the brands, because I think there are a lot of stats. Like, for example, there was around 60% of brands they wanted to test AI. And that was a global stats. But nobody knew what they want to do. Everybody wants to just onboard AI just to look cool and just to be part of the moving industry. But nobody knew what that is. And that's why agencies had to answer those requests. So, yes, I do feel that all these proprietary tools that were mushrooming might continue mushrooming even in 2026, but only a few of them will stick. And the reason being is, like any new disruptor, anything new that is introduced into the market, I think it takes time to actually stabilize and in terms of making it ground. So once everybody has actually made sense of what this AI is, its role into marketing and how we're going to make use of it, is the tool that answers those questions is going to stick. But till that time, I think we should not be close to all these new tools, all these proprietary tools. Otherwise, we wouldn't be winning as many awards if we didn't have clients like SBS who were actually open to testing all these new innovations. We wouldn't be achieving and reaching their clients where they are. So we have to be open, but we have to do it responsibly.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. I'll come to you, Namfundo, with one of my sort of last questions. How does this, you know, sort of personal sort of recognition in the industry for you as a marketer translate to the brand? It's to the growth of the brand and the recognition of the brand. How do you, because again, as a marketer, you sit with a team that you kind of report to and communicate with. How do you take those wins into those conversations in terms of how that then influences strategy going forward?
I see the recognition actually as an extension of the brand. So when I show up with integrity, clarity, and conviction, it directly reflects on Stellenbosch Business School.
So being recognized, it's about what I represent, which is a brand that is thoughtful, collaborative, and a serious impact. So that recognition builds trust in that market, and it actually signals that the school doesn't just do good work academically, they're also in the industry meaningfully. So that trust is everything in education and leadership, of course. And ultimately, my goal is always the same. It's to serve the brand, the students, and the future of responsible business. So it's not personal recognition per se. It just helps strengthen that mission.
Danette, I think before we lost you, one of the things I think that I was asking you, and of course handing over to you thereafter, is this thing that I think Perrine was talking about quite a bit, which is, I guess, the having those responsible sort of guardrails and building some of these platforms in ways that serve the brand, but also serve the industry. What have you been seeing? Because you've also been very involved in the awards scene, very much judging awards, talking to brands, talking to agencies, and you've been doing this for years. How has 2025, coming into 2026, changed how there's an expectation almost to build platforms?
I think Perrine is very right that last year everyone was jumping on the bandwagon. And I think now we sort of come back down to earth a little bit, and now we're starting to ask those questions, those ethical questions. There was an article on Buzz the other day about influencer marketings and or influencer marketers who are not real. They are AI generated and they are going to be used to influence people to buy brands, for example. Now, how do we make sure that that's ethical? There's a really nice one that was done by the SPCA, and there's a puppy influencer. But that's very nice and it's very above board and it's ethical, and the puppy influencer is there to help raise money for the SPCA. I think VML did it. It's a really great little campaign. But what happens when it's not that ethical? What happens when it's giving wrong advice? So I think we're going to see a lot of that happening. And I think we're going to see more award ceremonies having to recognize AI and how do they do it? How do they recognize it in the process of agencies? How do they recognize it when it actually is almost cheating, you know? And how is it? How does it, and then how do agencies recognize it? I've heard of a case where an agency was asked, how much of your worth is now AI? And that needs to come off our bill or be halved, for example. So we are seeing a huge change happening. Agencies are going to have to relook at how their model works. And I am a little bit concerned because it reminds me of print. The print model worked in a certain way and suddenly it disappeared when we got social media. The agency model, now we have AI. So I can do anything myself, really, and at half the price or less. So how do agencies make sure they don't become like print and reinvent themselves? So I think that's what this year is pointing towards. That's my prediction, just by reading and looking what's happening. Not very positive, I'm afraid. But then again, it will separate, as it always does in an industry, the winners and the losers. I would like to ask Nomfundo a question.
Sure.
Maybe it's something we can investigate further on the Lead Creative podcast, and we can ask some experts what they think as well. It's probably going to be an interesting topic. But I was hoping to ask Nomfundo a question, because I had a look, and well done on congratulations on the award. But I see that you worked at Woolworths, Mr. Price, Brown-Forman. And these were a lot of retail brands, and now you're working in a really different space. And I just wondered how the lessons you learned in the retail space can translate into this academic space, and what are the different challenges that you had to meet in your role? If you could maybe just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, you're just taking me back to memory lane. Yes, I did start off in retail, and then I moved on to liquor. I was in the liquor business for a long time. And while I was at Woolworths, I was actually looking after the Good Business Journey, which was very much the beginning of sustainability and responsible business. And then when I moved on to Brown-Forman, which is Jack Daniels, that was actually also very much a responsible brand and making sure that liquor is sold in a responsible way. So all these learnings that I've gathered from these past companies have just shown the importance of how we need to be marketing quite responsibly. And it's funny that you were mentioning responsibility in AI, because as Stellenbosch, we are looking at that. And, you know, we are also in a space where, from an academic point of view, AI is making a huge impact. Universities can't keep up with it. We don't know how we're going to navigate the AI world. And by the time things come up in the learning environment, it's already changed already. So for me, working all these different spaces, it's just shown me how it's important as marketers and actually advertisers to focus on marketing responsibly, especially now also with AI and all the different changes that have come. So yes, that's what I picked up.
Thanks for that. I think this is one of those things that's becoming a huge, huge thing. Being responsible, not just responsible with AI, but responsible in how we communicate as well. And I think to Danette's question about those learnings from retail to I guess to education or to, you know, into this academic space talks a lot to this idea, I suppose, that we started off earlier about human behavior, that if you understand human behavior and you delve into human behavior, the industry becomes in some ways secondary, or at least you bring those insights into a different industry while understanding human behavior and the changes that inspires or that leads to. I think, so as my closing question, I'll come to you, Perrin. So we usually have a question where our guest passes the mic to our next guest. And one of our previous guests was Tami Majola, the executive head of brand and communications at Vodacom. And the question he asked is related to what we were just talking about now. And the question he left was, how will marketing remain relevant without AI?
I think this also ties back to Daniela's point, and that is brands, there are certain brands that want to adopt AI, whereas there are certain brands that want to refrain or stay away from AI, right? Mm. In my opinion, I feel marketing is at this juncture, marketing is definitely a blend between AI and human. And that is, as much as we use AI for efficiencies, we also need the human layer and the strategic thinking to make it more authentic and cut through the noise. So if anything, in fact, marketing, the brands as well as the agencies that still add the human touch is how they're going to differentiate themselves from marketers who use just AI.
So, Perrin, now it's your turn to pass the mic to our next guest by leaving a question for them around their creative process, creativity, marketing, and brand building, or any trends that are happening in the industry right now. What would your question be for our next guest?
You're putting me on the spot right now, Mongesi. Okay. My question would be, what percentage of your marketing would you blindly rely on AI for without any human intervention? What percentage of your marketing effort? So what I mean by that is, let's say when we're doing creative, a big trend that we've seen of late is that we started using a lot of AI, because you've seen Nano Banana from Google is catching a lot of trend, and that's where Google's pay price went up and all of that. So what I'm trying to say is, what percentage of your efforts would you solely focus on AI where human intervention is not needed?
Mm. Okay. That's an interesting, fascinating question. Nomfundo, I'll come to you now with your pass the mic question. So one of our previous guests was Gillian Wrightford, the FE South Africa lead and ACA executive director. And the question she left was around creativity and creating more compelling creative work. So for context, she says, creativity is the second biggest lever for brand growth and brand size. And not doing bold, strategic, creative work is reckless. So the question she leaves following that context is, when are we going to acknowledge that, not doing bold, creative, strategic work is reckless? And how are we going to change it?
Okay. So it actually ties quite closely to the question that I want to leave. How we're going to do it is going to have the time to think. I think currently as marketers and advertisers and actually the industry in general, we don't get time to pause and think and interrogate what we are doing. We're trying to keep up with everything that is happening, such as AI or the next change or the next wave, the next buzzword. And I think the time to think is when we'll actually get that time to interrogate and get back to looking at that creative, strategic, bold work that she referred to.
Awesome. And now it's your turn to leave your question for our next guest to pass the mic and leave them a question about their creative process, marketing, advertising, and what they do in the background of you as trends in the industry.
Mungiz, I would say my question is about how do we bring back the time to think? Because I truly believe that will bring back, you know, the core of what marketing is actually about, and not chasing every silver bullet that comes along the way and doing it in a responsible way.
Amazing. Thank you so much for making time, and congratulations on all the wins, all the successes as well. Parin, Nomfundo, and Danette, thank you for making time. This was an amazing conversation. For our listeners and viewers out there, we had some challenges with Danette's connection, as I said earlier, and whenever we could get Danette in, we got her into the conversation. We seem to have lost her again right now, but this was a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mungesi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mungesi.com.